But we're on the return to Jerusalem. We had read last week at the ending of 2 Chronicles and the beginning of Ezra, basically saying the same things. And we'll just recap that in the first chapter of the book of Ezra. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it also in writing. And like we talked about last week, when that was put in writing, that was the law and there wasn't no going back on it. That was for the Medes and the Persians. So when he put this in writing, it was a big deal. Thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he had charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? His Lord God of Israel, he is the God which is in Jerusalem. And whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth, let the men of his place help him with silver and with gold and with his goods and with beasts, beside the free will offering for the house of God that is in Jerusalem. Then rose up the chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin, and the priest and the Levites, and all of them whose spirit God had raised to go up to build the house of the Lord which is in Jerusalem. And all they that were about them strengthened their hands with vessels of silver, with gold, with goods, and with beasts, and with precious things, beside all that was willingly offered. Also Cyrus the king brought forth the vessels of the house of the Lord which Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem, and had put them in the house of his gods. Even those did Cyrus king of Persia bring forth by the hand of Mildareth the treasure, and numbered them unto Sheshbazzar, the prince of Judah. And this is the number of them: 30 chargers of gold, 1,000 chargers of silver, and 29 knives, 30 basins of gold, silver basins of a second sort, 410, and other vessels, 1,000. And all the vessels of gold and of silver were 5,400. And these did Sheshbazzar bring up with them of the captivity that were brought up from Babylon unto Jerusalem. That was reading the chapter, first chapter of Ezra. And notice that Cyrus had sent back those chargers and the things that Nebuchadnezzar had found, and those were the items that King Darius, when the mead had they were drinking out of, back when we read in the book of Daniel last week, we had talked about that, and that was brought forth a contempt on God, and he died that very night after the finger come out and wrote what it did there on the wall. But these things have been sent back to where they belong. So let's keep that in mind. That was it's a pretty picture. It kind of reminds you of that ark going back after the Philistines had captured it, and they kind of made contempt of it, and then they sent it back, didn't they? But so just a thought there. But going to our outline, we'll read here. In the book of Ezra, now the first year Cyrus, king of Persia, the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled. And we'd read that a little bit last week and had put that into proclamation. Now, going forward, in the second paragraph under the return to Jerusalem, we're introduced to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, into the third chapter, second verse, and which would eventually be the governor according to Haggai. So if you go to Haggai 1 and 1, you'll read about these times just a little bit ahead of where we're reading in Ezra. The times that Haggai and Zechariah would have been written would have been like in the second year of Darius, not of the Mede, but Darius the Great, as we'll refer to. So that would be a few years after Cyrus, but right in here within a 20-year time span anyway. But would be a leader, as in the states in Ezra 2 and 2, which came with Zerubbabel. In chapter 2 and 64, states that 42,360 had returned. So I just wanted to make that point in chapter 2, because we're not going to read through all the families and things like that. I don't want to disregard any of that. There's a reason for every one of those. Yeah, it'll show up if you wanted to study that out. I'll about assure you those family names meant a lot. And you can actually see that in the last few verses of chapter 2. And we may touch on this just a minute, but and try not to take away from them coming back in, but there's a point here to be made, I think. In verse 59 of the second chapter of Ezra, "And these were they which went up from Tel-Melah and Tel-Harsa, Cherub, Adon, and Immer, but they could not show their father's house and their seed whether they were of Israel." So they couldn't show their ancestry or their genealogy. "And in the 60th, the children of Deliah, the children of Tobiah, the children of Nekoda, 652. In 61, and of the children of the priest." So there's two different groups here. You had the lay members, it was mentioned there in 59 and 60 of this household, and now you got the priest of these household. "The children of Habiah, the children of Koz, the children of Barzillah." Now that Barzillah name is one we'd read about back in I believe it was 2 Samuel, when David was running and he'd ran into a man that they called Barzillah. Barzillah is more of a name given. It means iron man. It's not necessarily a genealogy name. It's not a family name that they could research. So it says, "which took a wife of the daughters of Barzillah, the Gileadite, and was called after their name." So they went by this given name of this one gentleman way back when, and they said, "we're sons of Barzillah." Well, it didn't reflect who their genealogy was. So that's why these sought their register among those that were reckoned by genealogy, but they were not found. "Therefore were they, as polluted, put from the priesthood." So they wouldn't allow them to come in as priests because they didn't know who they were. They didn't know what their genealogy was. "And the Tirshatha said unto them," and that Tirshatha is a person term, one to be feared, or his excellency. So this was someone that's a name given from the Babylonians. That wouldn't have been a term that would have been used in Judah, but it was borrowed from the Babylonian names, the best we could tell. That this individual, whoever this may be, said unto them, said they should not eat of the most holy things till there stood up a priest with Urim and with Thummim. And that Urim and Thummim goes back to the breastplate of righteousness that was given to the high priest. And that basically what he's saying there, until there's a priest shows up that has taken this to the Lord. And they would also almost cast lots with this. That Urim and Thummim would have been put in like a pouch. When Aaron would have went in with this breastplate of these 12 different stones that was on his chest and four rows of three different stones per row, that it says that this Urim and Thummim was put in to this breastplate of righteousness. So I don't know if that's like a pouch or a bag or something, or maybe it was a place in this breastplate, but Aaron would then go in with this entire breastplate of righteousness with that was attached to this ephod, and that's what he would then go into the Holy of Holies. He would go into this, and he would take this before the Lord. But that's what he's referring back to here, is that they wouldn't eat of these things, and that these priests are removed until this has been sorted out. So he's not really making a judgment here, but he's just saying that this guy of somewhat respect is saying here that they shouldn't be able to do these things. So there's a separation here. If you don't have the right blood, you don't get to come into these certain areas and do these certain things. When we read through, where was that at? The It talks about the horses in the 66 of the things that come in. Talks about the camels and that was come in. And all of these things were donated from other people when they were sent back. And then we talked about the amount of people there just a minute ago that was allowed to come back. Where was that? Somewhere in so many thousand there. We just read that, I believe it was. Yeah. 35, and there was among them 100 singing women. I've kind of got lost in it in here, but. Yeah, 64. The whole congregation together was 42,303 score, so 360. So 42,360 people came back with all these horses and camels, and this was the first that was coming back into Jerusalem. And this was ordained by Cyrus, and the law was given that this was to be done. Any thoughts on any of that so far? Yeah, we may continue our reading here. As we get to know Zerubbabel here in just a minute, we'll get to know him just a little bit better, like is mentioned there in 3 and 2. We'll get to that. And then Cyrus sent back the vessels, chargers. We talked about that. In chapter 2, before I skip over that, I think we mentioned it last week, but I don't want to not say it again this week because we're just actually getting to it. But you'll see the name Nehemiah said in 2, which came Zerubbabel, Jeshua. Jeshua is also Joshua, is how it's pronounced in other books, but that's Joshua was a high priest at this time. Nehemiah, that is not the wall builder Nehemiah, that's a different one, because this is somewhere to the tune of about 80 years different, 70 to 80 years different time frame. So just wanted to cover that. But Zerubbabel would be the prime builder of the second temple, and Jeshua slash Joshua, the high priest, the people gathered themselves together as one man, it says in chapter 3:1 of Ezra. And we do want to read that. And when the seventh month was come and the children of Israel were in the cities, the people gathered themselves together as one man to Jerusalem. Then stood up Jeshua, the son of Jozadak, and his brethren, the priest, and Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel. Now we may just stop there just a minute. The son of Shealtiel. If you'll go to Matthew 1:12, you'll read this genealogy. And after they were brought to Babylon, Jeconias, which is also, now this took a little bit of digging, Jeconias, it's another one of those translations, but that's Jehoiachin. That was the king that was taken as a young man, that was put into prison, that was then brought out of prison by the one named Evil Merodach and then set at his table. But just recognize that Jehoiachin is the same individual here that would be the father of Shealtiel. But and it's recognized here as Jeconias, or Jeconias, ever how you want to pronounce that. But that's Jehoiachin, being the son of Jehoiakim. So this Shealtiel and beget Zerubbabel, and it's spelled Zoro instead of Zeru. So the spelling of Jeconias is different than Jehoiachin, and the spelling of Zerubbabel there in the 12th is different than the Zerubbabel that we're reading back here. But they are in the direct lineage of Jesus Christ, according to this. But we'll read on here in the third just a little bit before we get taken into these other things that we've got noted in that paragraph of our outline. The son of Shealtiel, this is reading in the middle of the second, and his brethren, and builded the altar of the God of Israel to offer burnt offerings thereon, as it is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. And they set the altar upon his basis, for fear was upon them because of the people of those countries, and they offered burnt offerings thereon unto the Lord, even burnt offerings morning and evening. They kept also the feast of tabernacles that is written, and offered the daily burnt offerings by number, according to the custom, as the duty of every day required. and afterwards offered the continual burnt offerings, both of the new moons and of all the set feasts of the Lord that were consecrated, and of every one that willingly offered a freewill offering unto the Lord. From the first day of the seventh month began they to offer burnt offerings unto the Lord, but the foundation of the temple of the Lord was not yet laid. So we talked about this a few weeks back, but they rebuilt the altar first. Then they're going to rebuild the foundation, and then they're going to rebuild the temple, and then they're going to rebuild the walls when Nehemiah comes. But it's all fixed from the inside out.
Does Nehemiah, does he come in the second wave of return or the third?
I'd hate to speak to that right now. I'm not exactly for sure of when he comes back. I believe it's written there that it was in the 20th year of Artaxerxes when Nehemiah comes back, so I'm not just exactly which one that is, but Ezra comes back first, so I guess it'd be the third when Nehemiah comes back, and he makes two different trips with about so many years span in between those two, if I remember that correctly. But yeah, Ezra comes back, and I don't know that Nehemiah is with him when he first comes back.
So the way all that lines up by that, then the wall would have been built after
yes.
The temple
was built. Yeah. Yeah. Although I was, in your mindset, you're thinking, boy, that just wouldn't make sense to have gone back into that to that area where the customs wasn't necessarily being followed, and it place being ransacked and just tore down, and you're getting these adversaries against you, like we're going to read in our next paragraph. You would think they would have rebuilt the wall first, but it didn't happen that way.
Yeah, that was always confusing to me, because I always thought, that the wall would have been built, and it seemed like it leads more toward the temple being built first, but then you can almost see it both ways.
Yep.
But I've never been clear on that, if the temple was actually built first or well, the wall. But if Nehemiah did come probably the third way, then the walls wouldn't have been built until after the temple.
You know how we read in Daniel there was a few chapters that were taken out of chronological order. We would read 4 or 5, then 9, then maybe back to 6. Well, Ezra is really not a lot different. When you read middle way through the 4th chapter, and maybe we'll get there by the end of but he does a lot of jumping around in the 4th chapter, verse 5. It mentions Cyrus, king of Persia. Well, we'll just hit that real quick. It said, and hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia, and in the reign of Ahasuerus, in the beginning of his reign, wrote they unto him. So that gets real confusing from 4 and 6, because it jumps ahead about 6 kings, 4 to 5 anyway, talks about Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes, and then through the 7th verse through the 23rd verse, that portion is taken way out of time frame, and then the 24th verse comes back and refers to the 5th verse. So there's a bunch of kings right there that messed me up for the better part of a month, because there just wasn't no way to make that work. There wasn't no way you could be talking about this letter to be written with Artaxerxes and try to figure out how in the world that had anything to do with what they were doing here with Cyrus and then Darius. But if you pull that letter writing out, and then you go from Cyrus to Darius, of which we're going to read here in just a bit, because going back into the 5th chapter, you'll see through the 6th chapter that they're referring back to Darius again. And then they're talking about this letter that was written. And then they're getting all of this, but we may be jumping ahead on that just a bit. But but it talks about in that 4th chapter, it talks about the walls being built. And it talks about, and you're thinking, did the walls come first? But when you understand the king, Artaxerxes, that was referred to, Artaxerxes was in Nehemiah's time, 460-something B.C., as opposed to we're in 430s. Yeah, still not there yet. Very, very, very confused and had this, well, I'd have made a bigger mess, but boy, it'd have been sure nice if it had been written chronologically. And
that's what Paul meant when he said rightly divided.
Amen. But even in the heading of my Bible, it talks about there in Ezra 4:9, it says the letter to Artaxerxes, and you're thinking, golly, how many of them was he? Because I know there's one in Nehemiah. I know there is. And that forces you into that time frame that you're trying to write down and trying to understand. And then you get to questioning, is there really two of these Dariuses? Is there two of these, you know, is there another Cyrus that I'm missing somewhere? And so it's been a good study. And I ain't saying I got it all down, but when you're able to put some of these things in certain chronological order, it does make a lot more sense. And with that being said, we may go ahead and read on through our outline here. We talked about, notice they built the altar of God first, as is written in the law of Moses, Ezra 3:3, and Deuteronomy 12:5-6. So if you were to go back there and read that, you'd see that that's how it was done. They kept also the Feast of the Tabernacles. In the Feast of the Tabernacles, they would build booths. And this was small little huts to live in for 7 days, made of sticks and branches to remind them of the 40 years that they spent in the wilderness after leaving Egypt. They also offered burnt offerings of new moons and set feast, Ezra 3:4-5. So that's what we just read. The foundation of the temple was not yet laid, as it was mentioned in 3:6. In Ezra 3:8, they appointed the Levites from 20 years old and up to set forward the work of the house of the Lord. And we've heard Brother Jeff mention that more than a handful of times, seem like lately, but there it is. It talks about them being appointed as 20-year-old is when they would start serving there. And the builders laid the foundation of the temple in 3:10. So if you want to read that real quick. And when the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, they set the priest in their apparel with trumpets, and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with cymbals to praise the Lord after the ordinance of David, king of Israel. And what they mean by that was the way that David had brought the ark back in. He had done these very same things. So they had followed that outline. They very traditional people. They will follow traditions to no end. But they hadn't done that for a long time. But now that Zerubbabel don't know a whole lot, but it sure seems like that he's able to direct them in the things of the way that they would have done it back in David's time. And they're going to follow the customs, and they're going to do the right things by allowing the right priest to serve. So everything you're reading, it seems like that they're coming back in and they're pointing their lives back to God. And in the 11th, and they sang together by course and praising and giving thanks unto the Lord because he is good, for his mercy endureth forever toward Israel. And all the people shouted with a great shout when they praised the Lord because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. But many of the priests and the Levites and chief of the fathers, who were ancient men that had seen the first house when the foundation of this house was laid before their eyes, wept with a loud voice, and many shouted aloud for joy. So there was joy from the young, there was weeping from the old. But keep in mind, these old men at this time, like we'd mentioned before, they were exiled for 70 years. So let's say they were 10 to 12 year old at the time that they could barely remember. They could remember back to their childhood, but they could remember the glory of that old house. And they're weeping because of, hopefully, they look back to think that's what it once was. We were outcast, but they were now brought back in, and maybe they were shown their errors. Maybe it was weeping from the old house being better than the new one. Maybe they were weeping because it was smaller, the new one being smaller. Or maybe there's just weeping to say, well, we don't want to take that for granted again. Us coming back into the house of the Lord today, man, we don't want to take that for granted. Man. But it says to finish up in the third, so that the people could not discern the noise of the shout of joy from the noise of the weeping of the people. For the people shouted with a loud shout, and the noise was heard afar off. Reading to the end of the third. Getting back to our outline. No doubt some of these men were overcome with joy, overcome with the thoughts that they didn't think that they would live to see this day. Some might have said for the might have been sad for the original size was said to be much bigger. I could just imagine seeing this as a young child and dreaming and having hope in what the prophets Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel had prepared them to see and what they had endured. This may have been a foundation and a beginning, but it had to be an awesome sight and a true realization that God once again would deliver his promise. All that time, that 70 years being out, and then you can read these prophets like what we talked about that would remind them the 70 years is about up, like Daniel had prophesied in the 9th chapter. It's about up, and he just joyed. And then right after that is when he was thrown into that lion's den. So he had that to look forward to. He knew it was coming, and I believe that's what gave him the faith to go into that lion's den there after that. Boy, this book is something special. Any thoughts on any of that? I don't believe there's enough intelligent people in the world that could have wrote all the mysteries that's held in this book. There's no way you could convince me that it isn't real. Like what all y'all taught us before, Jeff Barron, I mean, it's got to fit. Marty's teaching, it's got to fit. And if you try to take some of this out of context just to paint a pretty picture, you probably can, but somebody's going to shoot holes in it. But if you follow it and you can't figure it out, just keep digging. There's something else that's going to show you how it all fits. And maybe it doesn't paint as pretty a picture or that foreshadowing sometimes that we want to show, but then other times, boy, it just far exceeds that. If you can find the answers, and it's in there. But I guess now when I read through Daniel, and maybe I'm able to read this chapter and then jump to this chapter and read back to this one, boy, it just paints a whole different picture. When you put the chronological things in order, it really helps me understand that and maybe what they're seeing and maybe what they're going through when you read these certain things. And as we go into Ezra 4, we're going to see that as well. So we may go ahead and get into this just a little bit. We're in the outline, adversaries against Judah during the rebuild. In Ezra chapter 4, we learn of the adversaries against Judah and Benjamin. The people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building, as stated in Ezra 4 and 4, and hired counselors to frustrate them. 4 and 5, it states the time frame to be from Cyrus to Darius. This would have covered the kings Cyrus, Cambyses, Swotosmerdis, then Darius. And the reason why we say that, we mentioned that last week, and we'll get into it here in just a bit, but in chapter 6, and not jumping ahead too much, but it talks about that Darius then would go and look for this letter that Cyrus had wrote. Well, we know if Darius had been in waiting, if he would have been the next king after Cyrus, then he would have known these things. He wouldn't have had to gone into these writings that would have been stored over in Babylon. He would have remembered it. But there's a gap there. So when you read 4 and 5, this was talking about, and hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign king of Persia, or Darius, king of Persia. So they're just to understand that there's kings in between those two. Just because they're not mentioned in the Bible doesn't mean that they weren't there. But it just there's a time frame. There's a gap there. And then in the 6th, this is where we're going to kind of take this portion Well, let me read the 6. And in the reign of Ahasuerus, in the beginning of his reign, wrote they unto him an accusation against inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. So now we can establish Ahasuerus. Now, going to our time frame in the page before this one, we've got the kings of Persia listed there. It shows Cyrus, then Cambyses, then Sosthenes, then Darius the First, then Ahasuerus, then Artaxerxes. So keep in mind that time frame of Ahasuerus listed there at 485 BC to 465 BC. So when you're reading this in this 4 and 6, this is a different time frame. Now, we're going to skip over 6 through 23. And I'm going to kind of put 5, and then we're going to jump to 24, okay? And hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. Then in the 24th, then ceased the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem, so it ceased until the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia. See, that's the same Darius, what they're referring to there. When you read 7 through 23, just recognize that that was taken out of chronological order, that the book of Ezra was written by Ezra way after this happened. So he's looking back and he's writing the book, and I ain't going to say it's wrong. It just it doesn't flow well for my mind to not understand it. But maybe, we'll come back to 7 through 23. But what you're going to read through there, you're going to read about this letter that was sent. And you're going to read about how these people tried to keep the work from going on. But it talks about in the 12th, it says, "Be it known unto the king that the Jews which came up from thee to us are come unto Jerusalem, building the rebellious and the bad city, and have set up the walls thereof and joined the foundation." Those walls in 12, speaking of Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes there in the 7th, was in Nehemiah's time. So that's why if we'll just take that portion out and put it later on, when we get into chapter 5, it's going to make a lot more sense. So we're going to jump on to chapter 5. Then the prophets Haggai, the prophet, and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophesied unto the Jews. And you can read that. When you go into Haggai and Zechariah, they start within 6 months of one another. And they are it gives their time frame of the second year of Darius. So all of that lines up. And it says, "Prophesied unto the Jews that were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of God of Israel, even unto them. Then rose up Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, the son of Jozadak, and began to build the house of God, which is at Jerusalem, and with them were the prophets of God helping them." So again, now we're back in line because it's talking about building the house of God. Well, had you have read 12, reading of the walls in Artaxerxes, that would throw you way out. Who's the king? What's being built at what time? So I think this makes a little bit more sense. In the 3rd, "At the same time came to them Tatnai, governor of this side of the river, and Shethazar Boznai, and their companions, and said unto them, Who hath commanded you to build this house and to make up this wall? Then said we unto them after this manner, What are the names of the men that make this building? But the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews, that they could not cause them to cease, till the matter came to Darius. And then they returned answer by letter concerning this matter." So they're writing this letter. The copy of the letter that Tatnai, governor of this side of the river, and Shethazar Boznai and his companions, the Apharsachites, which were on this side of the river, sent to Darius the king. They sent a letter unto him, wherein was written thus, "Unto Darius the king, all peace. Be it known unto the king that we went into the province of Judah, to the house of the great God, which is builded with great stones, and timber is laid in the walls, and this work goeth fast on and prospereth in their hands. Then asked we those elders and said unto them, Thus who commanded you to build this house and to make up these walls? We asked their names also to certify thee, that we might write the names of the men that were the chief of them. And thus they returned us answer, saying, we are the servants of God of heaven and earth. So they're looking for a name, and I really appreciate their response. They said, who are you, and who said to do this? And their answer was, we're servants of God. God told them to go back and build, and he gave that to Cyrus, and Cyrus allowed it. And build the house that was built these many years ago, which a great king of Israel built up and set up. But after our fathers had provoked the God of heaven unto wrath, he gave them under the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this house and carried the people into Babylon. But in the first year of Cyrus, king of Babylon, the same king Cyrus made a decree to build the house of God, and the vessels also of gold and silver of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took out of the temple that was in Jerusalem, and brought them into the temple of Babylon. Those did Cyrus, the king, take out of the temple of Babylon, and they delivered unto one whose name was Sheshbazzar, and whom had made governor, and said unto him, take these vessels, go carry them into the temple that is in Jerusalem, and let house of God be builded in his place. Then came the same Sheshbazzar, and laid the foundation of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. And since that time, even until now, hath it been in building, and yet is not finished. Now therefore, if it seem good to the king, let there be search made in the king's treasure house, which is there at Babylon. He's saying, go search the king's treasure house in Babylon, whether it be so that a decree was made by Cyrus the king to build this house of God in Jerusalem. And let the king send his pleasure to us concerning this matter. They were that confident when asked about who gave you this authority. They said, you go check your records and see if it wasn't Cyrus, ordained by God. It said, well, and you send your pleasure as to concern in this matter. Now in the sixth chapter, then Darius the king made a decree. A search was made in the house of the rolls, where the treasures were laid up in Babylon. And there was found at Ecbatana in the palace that is in the province of the Medes, a roll. And therein was a record thus written. In the first year of Cyrus the king, the same Cyrus, the king made a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem. Let the house be builded, the place where they offered sacrifices, and let the foundations thereof be strongly laid, the height thereof 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 60 cubits, with 3 rows of great stones, and a row of new timber, and let the expenses be given out of the king's house. And also let the golden and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took forth out of the temple, which is at Jerusalem, and brought into Babylon, be restored, and brought again unto the temple, which is at Jerusalem, everyone to his place, and place them in the house of God. Now therefore, Tatnai, governor, beyond the river, Shethar-Bozni, and your companions, the Pharsakites, which are beyond the river, be ye far from thence. Let the work of this house of God alone, let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews build the house of God in his place. Moreover, I make a decree, what ye shall do to the elders of these Jews for the building of the house of God, that all the king's goods, even of the tribute beyond the river, forthwith expenses be given unto these men, that they be not hindered. And they which they have need of you, both young bullocks and lambs for the burnt offerings of God, of heaven, wheat, salt, wine, and oil, according to the appointment of the priests which are at Jerusalem, let it be given them day by day without fail, that they may offer sacrifices of sweet savors unto the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and of his sons. Also I have made a decree that whosoever shall alter this word, let timber be pulled down from his house, and being set up, let him be hanged thereon, and let his house be made a dunghill for this. That's about as straightforward as it gets. We found the decree, and not only do we support what you're doing, we're going to give you more money. And we're going to make sure that you've got everything that you need to offer sacrifices and everything that you need for food thereon. And again, this being Darius, Darius the Great, as it's referred to. So we may be at a good stopping point there in the 6th and 12th. Any thoughts on any of that? we're definitely going to get into more adversaries, but that was some that had come asking the question, why is this being done? And they've hit a few snags along the way, but we had read earlier, it talked about finding favor from Cyrus, even through Darius, and then through Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes. And again, going back to somehow, some way, God turned these Persian kings, and he used these men to get what he wanted, and it wasn't, you could tell they wholeheartedly supported this. And you can't help but wonder if that wasn't done by people like Daniel, like what we read about. He was elevated to a position in front of these kings, and he was elevated, or he was given the ability to read and understand some of these prophecies, and he was put at this elevation inside their kingdom, and he made an impression. I believe he made an impression on these kings with power. And we can do that today. These people and men of power, whether it be in our city mayors or governors of Tennessee, we can pray for these people that we don't know, the name of people that we don't know, that they could be an influence to these people, and that decrees can be made and things can be done. So we need to do and need to be more like Haggai and Zechariah and some of these others and Daniel to talk of this can happen. It's not all doom and gloom. If we'll give God all honor and glory that he deserves, and if we'll follow his statutes and honor his commandments, I'm sure he'll show us favor he has before. Amen. Amen. If nothing else, we'll consider self-dismissed this morning.